Senate lawmakers debate changes to the abortion ban, a Republican state senator leaves his caucus, plus questions about a recession and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending July 29th, 2022.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, the Indiana Senate rejected an effort that would have deleted rape and incest exceptions from its proposed abortion ban. Republican Senator Mike Young proposed an amendment that would have limited exceptions in the ban only to when the life of the pregnant person is at risk.
And what you're telling me is, if they rape the woman, we ought to kill the baby. And that is not right, and I will never, ever accept that.
The debate just on Young's amendment took 2 hours, and lawmakers on both sides of the vote professed their religious beliefs on the floor to defend their position. 18 Republicans joined Democrats in voting against Young's proposal. Republican Senator Sue Glick says rape and incest victims shouldn't have choice taken away from them.
Don't foster that evil on them after the evil they've already suffered.
Lawmakers considered 32 other changes to the abortion ban. Most were offered by Democrats, and the vast majority were rejected. Does this give us a clearer version of what the final bill will look like? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat, Ann Delaney. Republican, Mike O'Brien. John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Nikki Kelly, editor-in-chief for the Indiana Capital Chronicle. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House Bureau Chief Brandon Smith. You'd think I'd know John Schwanes' title by now.
And your title.
But I wrote the wrong thing on my screen. Mike O'Brien. Are you surprised the rape and incest exceptions were kept in the bill?
No. It reflects what the vast majority of Hoosiers, what the majority of Republicans support. You know, and it wasn't for this idea that this bill was going to get more strict, or if you're going to follow Indiana Right to Life, their model, which doesn't just stop at no exceptions. It goes far beyond that on enforcement and you know, proving you were raped and things like that. It wasn't for lack of trying from the Senate Republican caucus. They spent a lot of time talking behind closed doors this week, trying to get to 26, and there was nothing that could get them there. And so ultimately, this package is what they can pass, right? I mean, it's all theoretical until you got to push the button, and that's what these guys were facing. And a lot of them, rightly, couldn't stomach passing a bill that didn't give some options for a woman who was raped or was going to die through the course of pregnancy. And Indiana Right to Life has really put themselves in a corner here. It reminded me really of the marriage amendment, the attempt to ban gay marriage 8 years ago, and Advance America and Eric Miller and all the threats they made during that session. And when it came time to push the button, a lot of those legislators, Republicans, just could not ban gay marriage. They felt like it was the wrong time for it. And you know what happened next? Nothing. Everybody got reelected. And we really haven't heard from Eric Miller since. And so Indiana Right to Life has really put themselves in a box here, calling for something that is clearly unacceptable to this legislature and certainly the public at large.
Mike talks about when it comes down to time to press the button. The final passage on this bill at the Senate, not final passage, but the Senate is going to take a vote on passage of this bill to send it to the House tomorrow, Saturday. If you're watching this on Sunday, yesterday. This isn't necessarily still simple, because you certainly have Democrats who won't support it, some Republicans who think the bill should have gone farther who may not support it because it doesn't go far enough, some Republicans who think it's a little too harsh, probably not a ton of those at this point. Can this get to 26 votes in the Senate?
I don't know.
Or however, get 26 votes in the
I
Senate?
I don't know whether it can or not. I mean, I don't think it in any way, shape, or form reflects what the public wants. And the Republican caucus doesn't apparently care what the public wants. They only worry about their right wing of their party.
I think they very much rejected that this week.
No, I don't think
the right wing was saying don't do this.
I know what the right wing was saying. So they took the least. Well, they took the. How do I put this? Instead of being completely inhumane, they're moderately inhumane.
I understand what you're saying.
I'm not saying no restrictions. What I'm saying is that this bill isn't.
No further restrictions.
This bill isn't is. inhumane. It absolutely is. And I don't think the three exceptions are sufficient. And the idea that you're going to give another deduction to a person having a child that she can't support and can't take care of and save her $3 in taxes is going to be enough to make up for this. They should leave this decision in the hands of the woman involved, okay? They should. And, you know, if they want to restrict it by a number of weeks when everybody knows you're pregnant, you've had time to think about it, okay. So pick 12 or 15 weeks. But these little gotchas that they've got all through the bill, now you have to have the affidavit notarized. That means we have to bring in a third person, and the child who's the victim of incest will have to tell not just the doctor, but also the notary that she has been the victim of incest and is pregnant. It is absolutely inhumane. It's cruel. And the idea that there could be people in your caucus that would get up there and say that that 10-year-old should bear a child is absolutely incomprehensible to the public.
In terms of this vote on the rape and incest exceptions yesterday, how much did the case of this 10-year-old Ohio girl who had to come to Indiana to access abortion care, is that playing a role in this debate?
Oh, I think it absolutely is. I mean, I think before that instance came out, it was sort of this nebulous idea that maybe every once in a while, a small child is raped, but it's so few and far between. And the fact that they proved it, that, you know, the case is going through, the guy's now, I saw yesterday the test confirmed he's the father. I mean, that really changed the dialogue and where, because every question right after it is, are you okay with forcing a 10-year-old to give birth? And even Mike Young, during his comment on his amendment, said, well, I would prefer to have an exception for under 16, although he didn't draft the amendment that way,
wrote a bunch of amendments.
Yeah, a bunch. So I think this would be a completely different discussion if that Ohio story hadn't come out.
John, Mike talked about Indiana Right to Life, and it has been very steadfast, and the only thing they're willing to accept in terms of exceptions is when the life of the pregnant person is at risk. And they're saying, vote against this bill. It's not good enough. Is that the smart play if you're that organization here? Don't you want, I mean, this bill as it currently stands is way more restrictive than current law. If you're Indiana Right to Life, isn't that what you're looking for?
Well, I think the challenge that any special interest organization that's dedicated to one purpose and one purpose only, as opposed to other groups, you know, the chamber has a whole bunch of things it's concerned about. Unions have a whole bunch of things that they're concerned about. But when your raison d'etre is just to stamp out abortion, and people have given you money based on that notion, they have volunteered time and efforts, they're keeping the utility bills paid and the people who are employed by these organizations, lobbyists, paid, it's hard then to say, you know, compromise is good. These are not people prone to compromise, which is why they're in that group to begin with. So I'm not sure that's an option, frankly. It may be the smart political option, strategic option, but, I mean, as a practical matter, I don't think it is. You know, we predicted, it's interesting, what was it, 6 weeks ago, some people were saying, oh, we're delaying the special session because of disputes over, for instance, the financial
compensation. And there are still some disagreements.
Yeah, well, yeah, but I think we've generally thought this is about Republicans trying as best they can to work things out and come up with some sort of language that's acceptable beforehand, and we saw full well that was impossible. Look at the amendments. I mean, you even had the lieutenant governor breaking it. How often do you see that?
On an amendment, that's very rare. I want to ask you the same thing I asked hers, which is you'll have, on the final vote on this in the Senate, you'll have Democrats voting no. You'll have a small number of Republicans who vote no because they think the bill goes too far. That group of 18 who voted to take out the rape and incest exceptions, are enough of them willing to ignore Indiana Right to Life and say, at the very minimum, let's keep the bill moving and I'll vote for it?
That's been a question all week. That's a common practice. Let's just keep it going. You've got a Right to Life breathing down your neck and you're inclined to think about where you're at with Right to Life if you're a legislator. You could vote for a bill that has no exceptions and not get endorsed by Indiana Right to Life because you didn't go far enough. That's an extreme position. So at some point, there could be a good number of this caucus that goes, I don't care what you're telling me, because I'm not supporting what you're asking me to support. And if you're just rigidly for no exceptions and vigorous enforcement, now we're forcing the prosecutor to throw the doctor in jail, I'm not for that. I'm for putting more restrictions on abortion. And at some point, you just kind of kick rights of life out of the room and go, we're going to do what we can actually do and go home. And if that's not good enough for you, then that's just tough.
Let's see if they have the gumption to do that.
They did yesterday. They've already done it.
It's not final passage.
Republican senator.
First opportunity.
Speaking of Mike Young, Republican Senator Mike Young left the GOP caucus this week in a story first reported by Casey Smith, no relation, of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. Young's departure from caucus came via a letter to Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Bray. The letter obtained by the Capital Chronicle cited the abortion ban debate as a major reason for his resignation from the caucus, in particular, exceptions for cases of rape and incest. But he also mentioned perceived personal slights by caucus leader Bray, including cancellation and postponement of meetings. Still, the six-term state senator says in the letter he won't participate in caucus meetings until such time that I feel it is appropriate to return. And Delaney, politically, of course, this is very interesting to talk about, but how much does this really impact either the caucus or the chamber?
I think it probably would make the caucus pretty happy, to tell you the truth. I mean, having had to deal with him and his ego all this time, but, you know, the only question I had is I wonder if it was, you know, the beginning of the rumblings about who the president pro tem is and whether there was some move not to make Mike Young president pro tem. I'm not suggesting that for a minute.
I don't think anybody.
Well, no, I'm not suggesting that. But whether there's you know, some little rumblings of discontent on the way things have been handled and the fact that they couldn't have unanimity going into this and they're going into 2 o'clock in the morning screaming at one another and possible fisticuffs going on, there could be some dissatisfaction with that. In terms of him and the impact on the chamber or the caucus, it's really probably positive.
I will say, in terms of immediate impact, the reason there was a vote on that amendment this week was because he left the caucus, because yep. Clearly the caucus didn't support it, and the rule is if the caucus doesn't support the amendment, you can't bring it to the floor. Well, Mike Young left the caucus so he could bring it to the floor. Beyond that, though, if this does last into next session, which it's not even certain that it will based on how he worded that letter, does this have any meaningful impact?
Maybe. He's a committee chairman. You know, I don't know if he could be a committee chairman and not be in the caucus. You know, I don't know what kind of latitude they'll give him. They'll give him on that. I think Ann touched on it. What surprised me this week really is the decorum. I mean, it has been nasty. Jim Buck took to the floor last night and was like, hey, can we talk to each other a little, be a little more respectful to each other? Eddie Melton got emotional on the floor, which is not an Eddie Melton thing to do.
That happened again today. Jim Buck insulted Democrats. Eddie Melton got up and said, "What the hell is
going on
here?"
What are we doing here? Yeah, and so it's been a long week, and it's been tense. We haven't had a lot of those late night sessions, particularly on something this contentious. So I get it, but this kind of thing, Mike Young leaving the caucus, and things that don't normally happen are happening this week.
Does this reflect, to Ann's point, if you're Rod Bray, are you worried about how this reflects on your leadership?
Well, there was no way Rod Bray or any human probably that we've ever encountered in the history of society could marshal unanimity on this issue. You can't get 100% agreement on this, so you're going to have friction.
You don't have to have 100% agreement to have people stop screaming at each other.
Okay, decorum is one thing, but getting agreement on this issue would be virtually impossible. So I don't think he's necessarily worried. In terms of what effect it has long term, it probably does more harm to Mike Young and the power he wields, especially if he is barred, if this continues long-term and is barred from returning to the chairmanship, which is a high-profile chairmanship, a committee mm-hmm. chairmanship that he seemingly enjoys. And certainly if you look at his legislative record, a lot of it has been in that vein, the criminal justice sorts of reform issues. If this were a evenly divided Senate where you had one vote at stake, then it would matter. But my goodness, in a supermajority, it kind of reminds me of going way back, Jerry Bales, who was a state representative from Bloomington, a Republican, and it was a badge of honor never to go to caucus. And I think a lot of people got jealous because they're, you know, going behind there and they're hungry and he's out there. He literally put his feet up on the desk in the chamber and just enjoy life. And it didn't affect anything.
Or a friend, Frank Newkirk.
He changed parties.
So. To that point about, again, what Ann raises about, are there questions, rumblings about Rod Bray? Reading this letter, though, didn't this feel petty from Mike Young?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a 3-page detailed letter, and there were definitely some petty parts. There were talks about, you know, I made an appointment with you and you, you know, made me sit outside and saw someone first and things like that. There were lots of old other stuff. I have heard that there is definitely a contingent in the Senate Republican caucus who would like a different leader. I mean, and I think we've seen that split in recent years on a couple issues. This one's just the biggest one.
And you could argue that the way Rod Bray was able to become pro tem was because he chose he made Mark Messmer his running mate effectively to bring together those sort of, well, there's more than two factions, but those two big factions in the Senate. So
yeah, and then the other interesting thing we've mentioned.
But discontent and actually removing him as leader is a very different story.
But the other interesting thing about the chairmanship, as we mentioned, see, I'm not even sure, like, let's say he does go back to the caucus. Can you still reward him with a chairmanship?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, you had a hissy fit so you could offer an amendment. I mean, maybe I guess I don't understand this caucus bind on amendments. I understand talking about them and you get an idea whether your amendment's going to pass and then it's ultimately still your decision. But this whole, like, you are not allowed as a duly elected senator to offer an amendment is just a little strange.
That's the problem.
But there's a political consequence for, like, a small p politics problem with that. You're putting in, presumably, the caucus doesn't want you to be put in a spot. And then they vote against it. Now you're putting them in a spot. Well, that's going to come around to you. You know, now it's your turn to not be put.
What you're pointing out is the fact that what happens with the supermajorities, all the decisions on what's coming up and what's going to be voted on are made behind closed doors.
That's why Bales can put his feet on his desk because they needed every vote. They couldn't start punishing guys who skipped caucus because they had a two-vote majority.
All right. The U.S. economy shrank by a little less than 1% last quarter, the second consecutive quarter of economic growth. That usually means a recession, but the nonprofit, nonpartisan group that determines that hasn't made a call. The White House is pushing back on fears of a recession. It notes that job creation and consumer spending continue to grow. But Indiana Republican Party Chair Kyle Huffer accuses the Biden administration of playing word games and says Hoosiers are struggling to pay for everyday expenses. The Federal Reserve raised interest rates again this week, the second significant hike in as many months, in a bid to ease inflation.
Nikki Kelly, does a definition or a label matter that much here?
In this polarized society that we're in, I think it does matter. You know, if you have a group that has always had one definition and suddenly they're like, I don't know, maybe we don't. I mean, I do see why people would feel like, you know, you're moving the goalpost because you are.
Right.
Now, having said that, you know, I've lived through a recession or two, and it doesn't feel like a recession. I don't know if that's like, you know, you know pornography
when you see it.
It doesn't feel like a recession because other parts of everything are moving so well.
And that matters, too, because consumer confidence and that sort of thing does help drive an economy. And so if a lot of people or if some people don't feel like we're in a recession, that can make a difference. So to that point, does the definition or label matter? Because if the messaging is we're in a recession, we're in a recession, we're in a recession, well, then more and more people will start to go, oh, I guess we're in a recession. I better stop spending.
Right. And I think Nikki's right. In the political context, if you're scoring it as a debate, you know, what are my talking points? Where is the sort of weakness in the defense of my political opponents? This is it. As a practical matter, though, I think these kinds of formal labels are often out of sync with what everyday Hoosiers or Americans feel, for that matter, because a lot of times they are trailing indicators or leading indicators. A lot of people in middle America are hurt at the same time people who are heavily invested in Wall Street. There, those people are just saying, hallelujah, happy days are here again, or reversed. You know, I mean, we don't feel it. All of us don't feel things in the same way at the same time, obviously. So I think there is still kind of a bottom line. I think people pay more attention to their grocery bills and their utility bills in the final analysis than they do to this.
And to that point, politically speaking, obviously if you're a Republican going into the midterms with Democrats controlling Congress and the White House, it'd be great if people thought we were in a recession for you politically. But more importantly then, are we in a recession? Are we not? There are clearly some sectors of the economy that are still strong. What really matters is a whole bunch of people are just hurting in their pocketbooks because inflation is just so high.
That's what really matters. We could have a 1% growth, and Republicans were still going to have a good midterm.
Right.
Because Biden's been in the tank forever on inflation and continues to you know, wear that politically for gas prices and the deliberate actions that he's taken to make sure that, that oil supplies are constricted in the state or in the country. So there's very specific things.
What are the deliberate ones that he's taken to make sure
oil supplies are... Eliminating pipeline projects, canceling federal contracts.
They're canceling federal
contracts. Saudi Arabia is now the incumbent.
Because they want to keep the price high.
Backup oil producer in the world than we used to be.
They're not producing anymore.
And every decision that Democrats have made because they want gas prices to be high because they don't want us on fossil fuels, so we're buying electric cars. These are all intentional.
And what about the decision made by your caucus in the House and the Senate here not to cut gas taxes when they could? When we have all of that money there and they could be cutting it by 70 cents.
Because it's fake. It's not the price of oil. It's the tax
on
top of it.
It's what people are paying.
So we didn't need a recession for Republicans to have a good.
I want to ask you. I think it was even last week that you said, because we were talking about the first congressional district, and I was asking you the impact of inflation on that race. You talked about the fact that you think inflation will start to come down by the time we get to the election. I think that's I hope that's true.
Well, if you have a contraction, you're going to have that.
Well, sure, but at this point, we're in August, basically. Uh-huh. Is it too late for inflation to come down enough to make it so that it's not going to kill Democrats?
The gas prices have dropped from, 550 down to 419, I saw today. If you go to the south part of the county, you can get it for under $4. Those things are coming down. They'd come down faster if the House and the Senate in Indiana had done the right thing and suspended the gas tax and the utilization tax. But they didn't, the sales tax and the utilization tax. But I think they are going to come down, and I do think that Roe v. Wade is going to play in this election. I think that we have a lot of young people, and we saw that when you saw the people at the demonstrations were almost all female, and we know women vote more than men do, and they were young. And they're always the ones that are difficult to turn out in elections, but they are energized by the Republicans' attempts to take away their right to choose.
It's a wild card that's hard to predict. And this part of the blame, I think, here goes to voters who are so easily led on these issues. You know, it's because of so-and-so party's policies or so-and-so president's. News alert, it doesn't matter who's in those offices to a large extent. There are cycles in the economy, and there are, yes, there are some issues, but it's not something that a new president next week can do something.
Worldwide.
That's true.
It's not as easy as that.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we post an unscientific online poll question, and this week's question is the country in a recession? A yes or B no. Last week's question, do you support the Senate GOP's total abortion ban with limited exceptions for cases of rape, incest, and when the life of the pregnant person is at risk? Just 13% of you say yes, 87% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Speaking of polls, a new one suggests that Republican Secretary of State candidate Diego Morales and Democratic candidate Destiny Wells are in a statistical tie. The poll is by Abdul Hakim Shabazz at Indy Politics and his polling partner, ARW Strategies. Its results show Wells leads Morales 31-28% with a margin of error of 3.5%, while Libertarian candidate Jeff Moore has 7%, but 34% of those polled are undecided. The firm polled 800 likely voters earlier this month, but it's not clear what the demographics of those voters are, making it hard to interpret the results.
John Schwanis, to that last point, how big a grain of salt should we take with these results?
At this point, I wouldn't put a whole lot of stock in it. I've tried to find the methodology, very precise methodology of this. I'm not questioning the margin of error, which has been stated and so forth. It's just appreciate seeing, and I think it's best practice for any time a poll is released to put all of it out there so people can draw their own conclusions. Having said that, I guess at this stage I'm not surprised. 34% of respondents were undecided. People are not paying attention yet to that. We just spent 20 minutes talking about things that people are paying attention to, and they're not quite there yet.
Yeah, in some ways is the best thing going for Diego Morales is that all of the spotlight is on other stuff right now.
Yeah, I mean, okay, there's 34% undecided, but if those break down similarly to this poll, then he's definitely in trouble and needs to focus on that. I think it's at least an interesting poll to take note of, and I think how Diego reacts to it will tell us how seriously maybe it matches insider numbers.
If you're Destiny Wells, It's obviously not bad news, but how much do you have to like meet your?
I think it's good news from her perspective. I mean, certainly it catapults her into contention on that. And you know, the 34% that are undecided don't know his history. They don't know what he's been doing, being fired or allowed to resign from the job he's trying to sit on the top of now, and the car and the rest of that. So it's certainly a big shot in the arm. She's an excellent candidate, and we'll see what happens here.
I want to ask actually about the Libertarian candidate. 7% for a Libertarian is significant in the state, especially because if he gets to 10%, they get to have public primaries the way Republicans and Democrats do for at least the next 4 years. Could that play a role in this race?
They almost got that in 2010, and they were going to sue on the back end if they got it because they didn't want it.
They might feel a little differently right. now as they're trying to mobilize a party.
Maybe. I mean, my guess is I would like to see the crosstabs on this because I'd like to see these administrative races, and Ann said this before, they should just be appointed because mostly they're going on environment. Everybody's kind of starts with, are you for Republican Diego Morales or the Democrat?
And they don't hear the name.
And you're like, oh, I'm a Republican. I'm for the Republican. You know, that's kind of where you start. And then if it's close, if it's truly a close election, of course the candidate, the kind of campaign they run and the impression of the candidates, of course all that matters, but it is hard to flip one of these statewide administrative
offices. They are all being appointed.
All right. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.